Hello and welcome to this podcast which covers the discussions at the July meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board held in London between the 18th and 19th of July 2016. My name is Adele Gilbert and I am part of the External Affairs team at the IFRS Foundation. I am joined today by Stephen Cooper, Board Member, and Hugh Shields, Executive Technical Director, to talk through the discussions and decisions taken at the July meeting. As always, please note that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants. They do not necessarily represent those of the board. Stephen, I'll hand over to you.
Okay, thank you. So the first thing that the board considered this month was a narrow scope sweep issue related to the amendments that we're going to publish to IFRS 4 dealing with the interaction with IFRS 9. And the sweep issue was to do with the disclosures. And what we wanted to do was to better align the disclosures of the fair value disclosures, the scope of the fair value disclosures with the scope of the credit risk disclosures so that they each apply to the same two groups. So now each of them will apply to, firstly, the category which is financial assets with contractual cash flows that are solely payments of principal and interest, but excluding those assets which are held for trading, and then all other assets. So by doing this, we avoid the problem of having a slightly different scope for each of those two sets of disclosures. And that was the only thing that we discussed. Really, the deliberations had all been finished on that, and we're in the process of drafting the final standard.
Yeah. It's probably just worth adding that this is one standard where a number of constituents have asked us to act expeditiously, and the board expects to issue the final amendments to IFRS 4 in September. So we are sticking to a very tight timetable on this project.
Okay, and over to you, Hugh, on the next section.
Okay, I will now speak about financial instruments with the characteristics of equity. So the board continued its discussion of potential approaches to classifying derivatives on own equity, and again focusing on the gamma approach. And firstly, and if you wanted to follow the papers, this was Agenda Paper 5B, the board tentatively decided that entities should not classify all derivatives as assets or liabilities, and it also tentatively decided to classify derivatives on own equity in their entirety rather than splitting them into components for classification purposes. The board then went on to discuss the application of the gamma approach to derivatives that result in the receipt of cash or other financial assets in exchange for the delivery of equity shares. And under the gamma approach, an entity would classify such derivatives as equity if the following conditions would be met. Firstly, that they are settled by the exchange of a fixed amount of cash or other financial asset for a fixed number of an equity's equity instruments, the so-called fixed-for-fixed arrangement. And the second condition being that they are either physically settled or net share settled. And the rationale for this is because such derivatives would require no transfer of economic resources other than at liquidation, and they would be claims for an amount that solely depends on the residual amount. Now, all other derivatives for the receipt of cash or other financial assets in exchange for delivery of equities would be classified as liabilities. And this, with a similar kind of argument, this is because such derivatives would either require a transfer of economic resources prior to liquidation, or they would be claims for an amount that would be wholly or partly independent of the entity's economic resources.
So this would be similar to IS 32, but not quite the same because of the net share settled.
That's right. Yes, so quite. And I think this is consistent with how the board has always messaged this research project and the work that the board is doing. Is that we don't want to do a wholesale reconstitution of IS 32, if you like, that very much IS 32 is considered to be a good starting point. But really what we're trying to do is to fine-tune IS 32 and put some more principles underneath it to underpin some of the conclusions in 32. Yeah. The last piece of this discussion this month, the board then discussed the application of gamma approach to derivatives on own equity that could result in an exchange of liabilities and equity instruments. And the board here noted that because these types of derivatives exchange an existing liability or equity instrument for a new equity instrument, or indeed a new liability, it is possible to structure arrangements with the same liability and equity outcomes in different ways. Now, the board tentatively decided that with the gamma approach, an entity should classify fixed for fixed derivatives that do result in the exchange of a liability for equities as equity, because such derivatives would be claims for an amount that solely depends on the residual. The board also tentatively decided that an entity should apply a requirement similar to the existing redemption obligation requirement in IAS 32, that's paragraph 23 of IAS 32, to ensure that arrangements with the same liability and equity outcomes are classified consistently, regardless of how they are structured. And then thirdly, the board tentatively decided that an entity should reconcile the interaction of this redemption obligation requirement that I just mentioned with the requirement that only fixed derivatives that exchange a liability for equity are classified as equity. So that was the conclusion of the July board discussions on the FIAS project. The board will continue its deliberations in future meetings. I'll pass back to Steve, who will run through the conceptual framework.
Okay, so the conceptual framework, we looked at three areas this month. The first one is the asset definition and the supporting concepts for that. Essentially, we've confirmed what's in the exposure draft, and perhaps the key change that was proposed within that exposure draft is to remove the requirements for expected inflows and outflows of economic benefits from the definition itself. And this had always been caused us problems in the past because of different people interpreting expected in different ways. So what we've done is to try and clarify what we mean in this area by saying that that there should be a right should have the potential to produce economic benefits. So removing the word expected and now has the potential to produce those economic benefits, and a liability similarly, a potential to require an entity to transfer economic resources. So that's the key change in, or the key confirmation, if you like, in the area of the asset definition. Secondly, we moved on to recognition. And also in this area, we've essentially confirmed the approach to recognition proposed within the exposure draft, although in this area there is some need to clarify perhaps what we had within that exposure draft. So consistent with the approach that was in that ED, the revised framework should not prescribe a probability criterion, i.e. it should not prohibit the recognition of assets or liabilities with a low probability of an inflow or outflow of economic benefits. This was an important change, really, to try and update the whole area of recognition. However, what the board did say was that we should, in the final standard, enhance and provide more direction on the recognition of assets and liabilities with a low probability of inflows or outflows. So what we're saying is that we shouldn't not have the recognition of assets and liabilities with a low probability, but we wouldn't always have such recognition, and we need to have a bit more to explain how the board would go about deciding whether low probability assets or liabilities should be recognised or not. And that's really the key change that we wanted to make in that area. And then lastly, measurement. The board discussed the whole area of current cost and how that should be described. In the exposure draft, we included current cost as one of the potential measurement approaches, and we discussed it in the context of historical costs, which many constituents found rather odd, and many of the comment letters mentioned that that's probably not the best place to put it. So the board has decided that the discussion of current cost, its advantages, disadvantages, would be retained within the final framework, but it would be placed under the heading of current value rather than historical cost. We also had a discussion about the basis on selecting different measurement bases and how we might decide based upon the sensitivity of the asset or liability to vary to changes in value, or how the asset liability contributes to future cash flows. So we discussed that whole area, but we didn't reach any conclusions, and we asked the staff to go away and do some more work in that area, and there'll be a further discussion at a subsequent board meeting about how to select an appropriate measurement basis for different assets and liabilities.
So I think it's fair to say that the measurement chapter has been quite a challenging chapter in the conceptual framework. It's certainly an area where many constituents had a lot of feedback. And I think what the board is really trying to do is we're trying to find the right balance between responding to that feedback and at the same time, though, recognising that the board is very keen to finalise the revised conceptual framework and get a document out at the beginning of next year. So it's really trying to find the right balance between how much extra work we do, but not fundamentally exploring this area as exhaustively as could be done.
Yeah, the exposure draft was fairly high level, wasn't it? And many people said you really ought to go a bit further, but
that's right.
I think it's very difficult to get to the sort of checklist that perhaps some people are really after in this area. But anyway, the staff will come back with some further research and further ideas in this area shortly.
That's right. I just mentioned one other area before we sign off, which is the agenda consultation. There had been further discussions with both the Advisory Council and the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum in July on the agenda consultation, and the board confirmed its tentative decision made originally in May that the focus of activity should now move from transaction-specific standards-level projects to reflect a greater emphasis on a number of things. So these are firstly supporting the implementation of IFRS standards and their consistent application, standard setting that enhances consistency between individual standards and the conceptual framework and builds on the revised conceptual framework we've just been discussing, that we promote better communication in financial reporting, and finally that we arrive at a research programme which is both realistic and achievable. And it's worth noting that if you look at our work plan now on our website, we did update it at the end of July, and you can see that revised work plan with those themes and the streamlined research programme that I just mentioned. And looking forward, there will be a formal feedback statement, and it's expected that we will publish that around the end of October, immediately following the discussion with the trustees and also the board's further conclusion.
Great. Thank you, Hugh and Steve. For more details, the official summary of the board meeting, which is called the IASB Update, can be found on the IFRS Foundation website, www.ifrs.org. That contains more detailed information on the topics covered at the July meeting. The next board meeting is scheduled for the week commencing the 19th of September. Thank you for listening.